The following is for information purposes only and does not necessarily represent the views and opinions of News Radio 680 WPTF and the Curtis Media Group.
We are making your home great, or at least offering you a chance to hear from experts in their field. And on Making Your Home Great, I'm Dave Alexander. We are live on the radio. 919-860-9783 is the telephone number. If you want to ask a question of Rhonda Benvie Plummer of Help Me Rhonda Interiors. Rhonda, hi, how are you?
Hi, Dave, how are you?
Well, that's good. All right, yeah. we're a little fuzzy. I think
are you a little fuzzy?
Yeah, well, that's all right. She's here by Zoom, but yeah. That's okay. You go ahead and tell me, how are things in the interior design world?
I would say right now they're very busy in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Yeah, very busy?
Yes, very busy. Can you hear me okay?
What kind of things are you doing?
I think there's a lot of remodels going on right now, though. I mean, just everybody all of a sudden is calling about remodels.
You did what?
Remodels.
Yeah, I'm just having a hard time. Remodels. You're doing remodels. What's the scope of the remodels? I mean, are you painting walls or are you knocking them down?
So a little bit of both, I would say, and I would think bathrooms and kitchens are definitely the most popular things right now. People are wanting to get those updated in their homes.
And people are changing out their bathrooms because why? Are they considering the fact they really don't use the tub?
A lot of them, yes.
Yeah.
A lot of them are getting rid of the tub. A very popular thing now, too, is to save space is what you call a wet room, you know, where the tub is actually inside the shower.
We're gonna
freestanding tub sitting inside of the shower.
Right. All right, Rhonda, we're gonna take a moment to remind folks that you can win a $25 gift certificate to Cape Fear Seafood Company if you call this number, 919-860-9783 on WPTF.
Thank you for listening to Making Your Home Great. If you have a question for any of our experts on the show today, call us at 919-860-9783. Now, back to Dave.
And that number also gets you a $25 gift certificate to Cape Fear Seafood Company. Those folks use the freshest possible ingredients. All right, Rhonda Benvie Plummer rejoins us. How you doing, Rhonda?
All right. Can you hear me better now?
I can hear you better now. I'm going to buy you a microphone. Anybody else who Zooms, I'm going to buy you a microphone. Sometimes on TV, somebody will be connected and you sound, you know, the whole room sounds open, right?
Gotcha.
But in your case, since we're still on dial-up here, the Zoom was not working perfectly. We're still on AOL dial-up at, you know, right here at Making Your Home Great. All right,
really?
So you're talking about bathrooms.
Yes.
People are taking out those bathtubs.
Taking them out, and some people are going to more of what you call a wet room is what I was talking about, where it's like a freestanding tub is inside of the shower.
Yeah.
So it ends up saving a little space.
Right.
You know, and so there's, you know, still a lot of people who like their tubs. And then there's some people who just don't want the tub at all, and we're just doing bigger showers.
Yeah.
But bathrooms are a big thing to update, as well as kitchens. That's, you know, they're the heart of the homes, really. Think about it. And, you know, those are the things that you really need to keep updated. We've had a lot of people get putting in new flooring, new carpet, new, you know, hardwoods or LVP. You know, a lot of updating of homes, that's for sure.
And you can now put flooring in bathrooms that you couldn't before, because this LVP and LVT, luxury vinyl plank and luxury vinyl tile,
right,
are basically the same product, but they look different. And the You put down that luxury vinyl tile. It looks like tile.
It really does, you know, and it's completely waterproof.
Yep.
It floats. It's really good, like, for people. I'll use an example.
Yeah.
So, redoing a bathroom in a 1960s house.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
Tile, back in the 60s, was put down literally in a bed of concrete.
Yes.
So, it is very, like, when I tell you, very hard to get up. Right?
Oh, yeah. I agree.
It's,
yeah.
It's a big, big project, and it adds a lot of dollars to the project. So when people have a little bit less to spend,
yeah,
I will suggest that maybe we do the LVT on top of the tile,
yeah,
and just leave it there. You still get a very updated look, but it saves you thousands because getting that tile up is very, very labor intensive, and people charge a lot to do it.
And the folks who do luxury vinyl plank and luxury vinyl tile will tell you they're not fastening it down like you would a traditional wood floor.
No, it just floats right on top.
And
there's no glue, there's no nails, there's no screws, there's no right. anything. It just floats.
So the product is excellent and it's waterproof. All right, so let's talk about the kind of showers they're putting in. Are they going a whole hog and getting the spray from both directions and the rain thing with a shower thing above your head?
I'm just not seeing that as much anymore.
Okay.
I think people who've had the rain shower up above,
yeah.
Consensus with a lot of my clients is they don't like it because you can't direct it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it's there. There's no, you know, turning it a different way. There's
yeah.
no anything, you know. So I think the people who end up liking those are the people who have the really big showers, and that's just one part of the shower.
Right.
You know, where they're able to move and go to a different thing, whether it be a handheld or, you know, a regular shower head on the wall. But if you have a smaller shower, people tend not to like those as much because you can't get away from it, especially women. You
right.
know, if we're, like, shaving our legs, you know, or something like that, you know, all the soft leg before you can ever shave your legs.
But people that makes sense.
Yeah. hate it, yeah.
And those tend to be long showers. Let's be honest here. That's, 30 or 40 minutes. If you're kidding.
That's my kind of shower.
All right, so let me ask you about the vanities. Are people putting vanities on top of the flooring? You know, they'll look like they'd move. Clearly they don't, but they're a piece of furniture on top.
Do you mean on top of the LVP?
Instead of building in a vanity.
Oh, you're talking about like a freestanding vanity.
Yeah, freestanding. It's got legs.
Yeah. People use a combination of that.
Yeah.
They tend to be very popular in like powder rooms. Right, where you don't need a lot of storage. Now, if you do a freestanding vanity, you don't lose storage. You know, so people tend not to, unless you have got like a huge bathroom.
Yeah.
If you need that storage space and a lot of it, it does take away as much as 8 inches.
Right.
Because you've got to have at least 4 inches of clearance to the wall for a freestanding.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah. And in this area you do, it's code. You know,
right.
So you got to have that clearance, you know, from the wall to the cabinet. Whereas if it's completely built in, go straight up to the wall. So you're adding 4 inches of cabinet on both sides, technically, to have it centered.
Right.
Right.
Wow.
So you do lose a lot of space when you do a freestanding. So that's why they're probably a little bit more popular in a powder room, because you don't need storage in a powder room, right?
Right, right. Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah
you don't. You absolutely don't. In a powder room. Now, you had another term for a bathroom that's been renovated with, and it sounded like rec room.
No, wet. W-E-T, wet.
W-E-T, all right. When I heard you say rec room, I thought, Okay. Are we playing pickleball in there? I mean, I know you can open up a bathroom and make it, you know, more spacious, but not that big. Okay.
A wet room. So in other words, everything gets wet if you think about it. The tub gets wet if you're taking the shower.
Right.
You know, whatever. It's just called a wet room. Very popular.
Is it? Okay. Well, you know, it's funny that they're the styles, the low entry, the I know you've got a technical term for it.
Zero entry.
You can you don't stub your toe on the lip of the shower. Those things are enormously popular.
They're very popular, and they're easier to do in a new build.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and when you plan for them and so forth, a lot easier to do in a new build.
Right,
they can be done in a remodel, unless you are bottom floor and on a slab.
Right. Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And it still could be done, but it would be very difficult. It would be very, very costly. you know, so the easiest place to do that is a bottom floor with a crawl space.
Right.
If you're doing a remodel. It's even a little bit more difficult to do on a top floor, right, with it. But it's very popular. Good system in place to do those. If it's not something that can be done in a remodel that I'm doing, I just always recommend, you know, my clients that we do, like, the lowest curb we can do.
Right.
Right, you know, so worst case scenario, you might have to pop a wheelie if you're in a wheelchair or something to get in it, but maybe like 2 inches.
I understand.
You get away with the 2-inch threshold, you know, but the curb there.
The zero entry can be made to accommodate a wheelchair for those who, you know, are in the wheelchair, and you just roll in, and you just get the whole thing gets wet.
Exactly.
Okay.
You just roll in. Yeah, so the zero entries are popular. Obviously, you know, just like everything else, they cost more, you know, to do.
Yep.
And a little bit more a little bit more difficult to do in a remodel, you know, unless you are on the bottom floor with a crawl space.
Now, on the other hand, there are things that you can do for people who are either wheelchair bound or, you know, there's that possibility that they might end up in a wheelchair. And I'm thinking about this for my house. Not that I'm near that, but, you know, when they say aging in place, they mean it seriously with me in my house.
Yeah.
We're going to age there because we can't afford to move ever. It's just until the rate goes down to 2%, I'm not doing that.
Right.
So, Rhonda, we can open up doors, make them bigger. My doors are the standard, 32 inches?
Right.
And that's small.
That's small. You need the minimum that a wheelchair can get through, the minimum.
Mm-hmm.
And this would be a wheelchair that's more automatic versus you've got to wheel it with your hand.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's 32 inch.
Yeah.
You know, so the 36 inch wide doors are the ones that are, you know, considered handicap accessible.
And,
you know, so, but you can get through a 32 inch.
And
door.
If you've got to play around opening it up, you're perfectly qualified to knock down part of a wall or an entire wall if that has to happen.
Right. It's very easy to make a door bigger if you've got the space next to it to do it.
Yeah.
Right. You know, so for instance, I'm remodeling a house now.
Yeah.
Been a part of it. It's, you know, working with a contractor and a client.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what they're doing. They're aging in place and completely reconfiguring one whole part of their master suite, getting a bigger bathroom.
Yeah.
They've taken on one side of the house is the master powder room and another bedroom.
Right.
They're taking that whole space, getting rid of the bedroom.
Yeah.
And making it a complete bigger bathroom, closet, master suite, and half bath, right?
Wow.
And when we were reconfiguring that, their hallway there is only 36 inches.
Hmm.
You know, so when you have a hallway that's 36 inches, obviously, mm-hmm. you think about it, you can't do a door that's 36 inches, or you have no trim around your door, right?
Yeah.
And so if they had wanted to be able to change their doors, they couldn't mm-hmm. because the space didn't allow a bigger door.
Right.
You know, so some things you can't do. You know, you just got to have enough room. You know, so if you're going to put a 36-inch door in, you technically need 36 inches plus 7 inches for trim around it.
Right.
Right, to be able to accommodate that door.
And the houses that tend to be built with 1,200 square feet, they tend to be really tight with the doorways. They put the washer dryer room right in front of the master bedroom door.
Right.
To the point where you can't expand it.
Right.
But you will figure it out.
We can figure it out. It's like this one, like I said, it's got to be completely reconfigured because there was no way to not do a major reno and get what they wanted and be able to age in place.
Right.
So budget plays a big part of things, you know, the way the layout is. And that's where I come in, you know. So these people called me. They had met with the builder.
Yeah.
They're a good builder, but he was not inept in reading the plans that they drew.
Right.
Right, you know, and that's why she called me. I think she heard me on the radio, quite honestly.
Yeah.
And that's why she called me. And, you know, when I got there, it was some things that were not going to work if they wanted to be handicap accessible. You know, so just putting another set of eyes on it and really listening to what that client was wanting and needing. You know, so I ended up redrawing the whole thing.
Yeah.
Right, and getting them exactly, you know, what they needed. And then we worked with the builder who had their person to draw up my ideas. And then they had some ideas, and we incorporated those. So, you know, when you get, you know, a designer and a builder all together, you want to really come up with a good product. Because I look at things differently than a builder does.
They're trying to, you know, match code.
Right.
And maximize maybe floor space by jamming everything together.
Right.
And you're not.
I'm looking at things more as, you know, this particular client, for instance, you know, what she was really saying that she wants.
Right.
You know, it was very important that it was going to be completely handicap accessible everywhere she turned.
Yeah.
You know, she wanted to be able to go to the restroom and it be handicap accessible. She wanted to be able to get in her closet and it be handicap accessible. I mean, every little thing. And I'm also looking at it for layout and balance of the space as well. Where a builder really is not looking at that unless they happen to have some design, you know,
right?
I'm not saying all builders.
Right.
You know, that would not be true. Right?
They've already built 45 homes that look exactly the same.
Yeah.
Why would they bother even thinking about that?
Exactly. You know, and that's why you just kind of, when you get all the different ones, you know, together, you really do. You get all the brains together that work differently, right? And you do come up with a good product. You come up with, you know, it might take a little bit longer. We might go back and forth and back and forth, but it's worth it. Especially when you're spending $150,000, $200,000, right?
Sure.
You want to make sure that you are getting exactly what you're wanting. And most people, like this particular client, I mean, I'm not going to say, I mean, she knew, you know, a little bit what she was looking at, but she wasn't sure.
Yeah.
You know, she's like, I don't think this is exactly what I'm wanting. And that's why she called me, right? And she was right. It wasn't exactly what she wanted. And so, you know, when I came in and we worked with the builder and all that, we got it exactly like she wanted it.
Okay.
And they're starting and everybody's happy.
That's what you look for. Everybody's happy. All right.
Everybody's
we're gonna break for news and then be right back with Rhonda Benvie Plummer of Help Me Rhonda Interiors on FM 92.9 AM 680 WPTF.
This is Making Your Home Great on WPTF FM 92.9, AM 680, and WPTF.com. Remember, if you missed any of the portions of today's show, we archive all of our shows as podcasts available wherever you get your podcasts and on demand always at WPTF.com. Now back to our host, Dave Alexander.
I should never talk over that part. All I would say is, if you are tuning into the podcast, if you go back and listen to the first couple of minutes of the show, just fast forward about 3 minutes, 4 minutes. Rhonda Benvey Plummer is here from Help Me Rhonda Interiors. No, it sounded like Charlie Brown's mom or Charlie Brown's teacher.
Right.
Yep. All right, so we still have that $25 gift certificate. Go ahead and call 919-860-9783. I am assuming that the exodus from California and the northern states continues.
It continues. I get a lot of new clients moving here, you know, from the area. Mm-hmm. I work with a lot of realtors, too, that recommend me. So it could be that, you know, because I get a lot from that, you know, as well.
Yeah.
That's why I see so many, you know, coming, you know, just from everywhere. But it seems like California's big and up from up north. New Jersey.
Right.
Boston. Been saying a lot like that. Boston, Massachusetts area lately, too.
Right.
So me and the Boston people, we like to listen to each other talk.
I would think you need a translator, don't you? Yeah, Boston accent is kind of thick. And you got to pronounce it that way. Rhonda, it's Boston.
Boston.
Not Boston. Boston. Like there's an H in there. All right, so when they come, and they are, when they come, sometimes they don't bring a lot of stuff.
They don't.
And why is that?
I think because the moving expenses are so high these days,
yeah.
You know, just because of the price of everything and, you know, labor, gas, you know, everything, that sometimes it's just not worth it. You know, I think it depends on the individual circumstances. But, you know, I had one client, you know, she said that if she had moved her furniture, you know, that she's had for 10 or 15 years,
yeah.
It was going to cost her like $50,000 from California.
Yeah. That's
and she's
nuts.
Just like, I'm not moving it. I'm going to get me some new furniture for that. You know, I mean, it's just like, this didn't even make sense,
right.
Really, you know. So that's what's happening a lot. I think it depends on how far you're coming.
Right.
And, you know, and sometimes when people move, you know, they know that maybe some of the stuff's not going to work where they're moving, and they just don't move it, you know.
Right.
Or they have had it a while, and they're like, why spend, you know, any amount of money moving this when it's 20
yeah.
years old,
yeah.
You know? So I think that's kind of what's happening, too.
So what do you do for them?
I can do anything for them.
You pick everything out for them?
I used to have a furniture store, Dave, and so
yeah.
I still have, you know, all of those vendors. So I'm, you know, that one-stop shop, you know, where if you need furniture, I can do that. If you need cabinets, I can do that. If you need, you know, mirrors or just accessories or window treatments or rugs, carpet, flooring, plumbing, anything you can think of, then I have it, you know, right in my showroom. So that's what my job is to help people, you know, find that perfect sofa or that perfect chair with that perfect fabric that everything, you know, kind of blends together. A lot of people don't know about fabrics either, you know, when they're out, you know, shopping, you know, for sofas and chairs, even rugs.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of great fabrics out there these days that, you know, is really good if you have children or if you have dogs.
Yes.
That, you know, if you don't know about, you're not in that industry and you don't know about fabrics, you wouldn't know what to look for.
Right.
So I'm able to help people, you know, go, you know, like they might see a fabric that I'm showing them when we're going through fabrics and they're like, oh, I love this. And I'm like, yeah, it's pretty, but it'd be pretty for a pillow, not a chair.
Hmm.
Right. And it's just not the kind of fabric that would be good for a chair.
Okay.
It's not gonna hold up. You know, so that knowledge is great too. So when you're out, you know, picking furniture and doing things like that, you want to make sure that you have a knowledgeable sales type person that knows the difference between, you know, a polyester fabric and a cotton fabric or
yes.
a linen or a viscose, you know, that type of thing, so that they can tell you if it's going to fit with your lifestyle.
And you're also going to take a look at the floor plan.
Yes.
To help them decide what they need to do with individual spaces. Now, a lot of people are saying, oh, come on, I know what to do with a living room. You put a couch against one wall and a TV on the other. That's as far as I go, by the way, with interior design.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure, myself included, in my younger days, everybody that has listened to this show has bought something, one point or another, that didn't fit.
Yes.
I can't think it. You know, if you haven't, then kudos to you, because you would be in a minority for sure.
Yeah.
So a lot of people don't think about, you know, the size of the furniture. You know, when you go to a big warehouse, let's just, you know, let's just say the Bassett.
Yes.
You know, I'm a Bassett dealer. So just say the Bassett showroom in Raleigh. It's huge, right? Mm-hmm. The space is big. The ceilings are high. You know, so that furniture looks small in comparison to the space. So when you look at it, you go, oh, that's going to fit perfect, right? And then you get it in your space, and guess what? It doesn't fit.
Yeah.
You know, so measure. You got to know your space. And if you're just not good at that, then that's what interior designer's for. You know,
right.
If I'm one of those that if you just want me to come do your space, and make sure you don't make a mistake, then I'll do that. You know, it's worth it if you don't know how to go about that. You know, when you're spending $5,000-$10,000 for furniture,
right?
And it doesn't come in, you know, comes in and it doesn't fit. That's depressing, because you know what? They're not going to take it back.
Now there is that habit that people get into. They have gray walls.
Right.
Or what you now termed grayish walls with a little bit of beige in it, which I can't imagine it. I can't, you know, focus that on in my mind. But they have these neutral walls, and then they're buying furniture that's either the same color or so close it doesn't matter. Is that a wise investment?
Yeah, you always want to take your walls into consideration unless you're planning on painting them.
Right.
So when I'm working with clients, if they are not planning on painting their walls,
right,
okay, then I'm taking that wall color into consideration when I'm picking out things. And we're also picking out things in their lighting. In other words, I'm at your house and we're picking out these fabrics.
Right.
Because lighting makes a huge difference. And that's another thing that I look at when I'm in a client's house is, do you have the right lighting in your house?
Mm-hmm.
I could give you the name of 100 clients right now that would say, hire Rhonda just for the lighting, because they are shocked at how big of a difference it makes just to update the light bulbs in your house.
Right.
And with the new LED lights and stuff, people don't understand them.
Yeah.
I took literally a class on lighting these days, because people don't understand what all the different light bulbs and the Kelvins and the lumens and all. They don't understand that and what is the right lighting for the house.
We used to measure lights in, was it watts?
Wattage.
If you got a 60-watt bulb, well, it's kind of bright. If you got a 30-watt bulb, it's, you know, dim, which, by the way, was my nickname in high school. But now it's measured in lumens.
In lumens and kelvins.
Lumens, you know, and so, kelvins,
right,
of course.
Kelvins is the temperature of the bulb. So that means is it warm or is it cool? So in other words, a 2600 Kelvin bulb is going to be more yellow.
Uh-huh.
A 5,000 Kelvin bulb is going to be blue, bright, like hospital.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, I mean, that's what you would see, like, you know, probably 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 Kelvin would be, like, what is in an operating room.
Yes.
Right? You know, so the perfect color, the perfect Kelvin for your home is 3,000 Kelvin. It's perfect. It is like the perfect light. Like every bulb in my house is 3,000 Kelvin.
Okay, so it's we can perfect. Rely on 3,000 uh-huh. Kelvin.
3,000 Kelvin. And you're probably not going to find it at Lowe's or Home Depot.
Oh, you're not?
No.
Oh, that's good.
You might have to order them online.
I say it's good because we try to get people out of the big box as much as possible.
Yeah, they just don't have them. They either have like 2,600 or 4,000.
Okay.
Right. You know, so, and then lumens are the output of the light. You know, so the more lumens it is, the more light it is, the more bright it is.
Yes.
It's not the color of it. It's kind of like what we thought of as wattage. If you did a 100-watt bulb, you got more light. If you did a 60-watt bulb, it was less light, right? Because all the temperature of those bulbs were pretty much the same.
Yes.
And an incandescent bulb was an incandescent bulb. The temperature was pretty much the same.
Most everyone was frosted white.
Yeah, exactly.
In the factory, Okay.
So it is, you know, a little bit. So when I go into people's houses, especially if they have some age on the houses and they have, like, their can lights, for instance, and I look at them and they're just the most yellow can lights in the world, you know, I'm going to probably point that out in the house. And I usually have people change them if they're up for it. And just about every time they'll call me or they'll email me or text me and go, oh, my gosh. The difference in the lighting in our house is phenomenal. Thank you.
Very good.
I mean, because it is. They said they felt like, you know, going from a dungeon, right,
yep.
to a nice, well-lit, not obnoxious, right, light.
Right.
So lighting is huge importance. And so when I pick out anything for anybody's house, I'm always going to do it in their lighting.
Every now and then, Rhonda Benvey Plummer and I come to an impasse. She goes in one direction, I go in another. Pillows on the bed or on the chairs. That's where we diverge.
Yes.
And we also diverge in what's called undertones.
Yes.
It's hard to talk about on the radio because it's colors.
But we're gonna do
what we can coming up in just a moment. That there are undertones. There are gray undertones to gray. There are blue undertones to gray.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. I'm trusting in you. Rhonda Benvey Plummer of Help Me Rhonda Interiors on Making Your Home Great, FM 92.9 AM 680 WPTF.
Thank you for listening to Making Your Home Great. If you have a question for any of our experts on the show today, call us at 919-860-9783. Now, back to Dave.
Rhonda Benvey Plummer of Help Me Rhonda Interiors. All right. The hardest thing to do on the radio is talk about color.
It really is.
But let's assume that the reason this all does not click with me is because I'm a fella. Just listen, be sexist about it and say, I have no idea what an undertone is. What is an undertone?
So if you can think back to your plan in the primary color days of elementary school.
Yes.
Right? So think about when you put, like yellow and blue together.
Yes. Yeah.
So an undertone would be like, when you mix those together, yellow and blue, what do you get? Green, right?
Yes, yes.
So if you put more yellow, you're going to get a green that has a yellow undertone. If you put more blue, you're going to have a green that has more of a blue undertone.
Can I assume this is the difference? In broad scale, this is the difference between driving by somebody who has a yellow car, which sometimes can be very attractive, and driving by somebody who has a mustard car.
Exactly.
Oh.
So a mustard yellow means it has more brown in it.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, so it's about mixing colors. That's what an undertone is.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a true gray when you mix black and white together.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That is what your true gray is.
Yeah.
But if you mix white and black and blue together, you're going to get a cool blue undertoned gray.
Yes.
Right? If you mix a little yellow in with that, yellow and blue make green, right?
Yeah,
you're going to
get
a gray that's got more of a green undertone to it because you added that yellow.
Yes.
Okay. So if you play with colors,
yes,
like you did back in kindergarten,
right,
you would learn about undertones of color.
Right.
And then you also, you know, when you go to the paint store, you know, if you can see color, some people can't see color, can't see it at all. Like, you know, I can see it in the littlest of things. I
yes.
can see that this white has pink in it or has blue in it, has green in it. You know, everybody says, I just want white. Well, there's a million different whites.
Right.
You know, with the undertones in them. And so I get excited when a client can actually see what I'm talking about. But a lot of people can't. They don't see that undertone in the color.
And the reason this matters is because I could get a gray couch with a yellow undertone, and back me up or shoot me down here, my wall could be gray with a green undertone.
Right.
And is that a bad thing?
Yeah, because you want to make sure that, because so, you know, if you've heard people talk about grays, that you have like warm grays,
yes,
or you have cool grays.
Mm.
Your cool grays are going to be the ones that are more blue. Your warm grays are going to be the ones that are green. And why is that? Because yellow's been added to it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it warmed it up. It's a warmer tone. Right? So that's where that grays is coming in. It's like the cool grays are going out. The trend is like gray. People sick of gray. I'm sick of gray because I've done, you know, I mean, literally gray has been 13 years has been. I'm tired of doing gray out.
Yes. Yes. Amen.
Like, you know, it's like, okay, say, well, let's do a different color. Can we do a different color? And so, you know, that's why those cool grays are kind of going out of trend. The warm grays are kind of staying in, and that's the ones that are more browns in them that's going towards the beiges and the creamy undertones versus those cool blue undertones.
And so it's called grayish.
Grayish, yes.
Okay, all right. And and that's the new thing.
That's now. The new thing.
Now, how do I match my old furniture with something like that?
Yeah, it's usually if people have furniture that they're going to keep and they just want to update their wall colors, right, then I tend to pick a more neutral type of tone. That would still go with your gray, but take you over to that other side, and that's what I do.
And
that.
And another thing that my wife says that you agree with, but I still don't understand. She swings her finger, points her finger at the sky, and makes a circle, and says, "With this thing, I'll bring it all together." Everything gets brought together. What gets brought together?
It's all the different colors. So let's just say, for instance, and this is what your wife is talking about.
Yeah.
Let's just say, for instance, that people want to update their walls, that they have, like, furniture that they, you know, good furniture.
Yeah.
And nothing's wrong with it, and they want to keep it. But it's kind of, like, not the end colors right now. So let's just say they're a cool blue undertone gray.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's just say that I found some artwork or some pillows or accessories that goes towards more of what's in trend right now, but they don't really go so much with your furniture, but I have that one thing that pulls it together. Maybe it's a rug.
Yes.
Maybe it's a rug that has the cool grays in it, but it also has those warm, taupey, beigey colors in it. So then all of a sudden, it's like a work of art, right?
Yes.
Has put all the colors together so that it all kind of makes sense. And then we changed a little bit of artwork. We changed a few accessories. And then voila, it all makes sense.
The rest of us don't have to understand it because she does.
Yeah.
Rhonda Benby Plummer of Help Me Rhonda Interiors. How do we get in touch with you very quickly?
919-263-9054 or helpmerondainteriors.com.
This is WPTF. Making your home great on WPTF. We are live on the radio, which is still the best way to be on the radio, with Brock Emmons of Triangle Radiant Barrier. And thanks to Rhonda Benvey Plummer of Help Me Rhonda Interiors. I didn't get a chance to thank her on the radio. We were just trying to give you content all the way up to the moment the show's ends. So, Brock, we're having at Curtis Media a talk show host liquidation sale between Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. I don't know what Thursday looks like.
Okay.
But when I go outside.
Yep.
Monday with a high in the 90s, I'm going to liquidate.
Yeah, it's a hot and sweaty time, isn't it?
But we're up above 101 for Tuesday and Wednesday. The picture that the National Weather Service puts is all orange,
mm-hmm.
except for the yellow sun. And the yellow sun is larger than I've ever seen it. This is their icon to represent how bad it's going to be.
It's going to be an unusually hot couple of weeks. I mean, I actually looked at the weather report just now before the show started, and yeah. All next week the highs are 97, 96, 98, could even eclipse 100.
Yeah.
And then I looked at what's happening in Fort Worth, Texas, and they're in the low 90s. So somehow North Carolina is going to beat out Texas for heat this week. It's going to be an unusual week.
Okay, so what does that affect with your company?
It's all insulation. Everybody right now is blowing us up trying to get the insulation. But our second floor is too unbearably hot. The air conditioner never turns off. They're already getting high utility bills. I mean, it's just getting to that time of year. So try to take advantage while you can, especially since Duke is throwing all those rebates out there to increase the attic insulation. You can get a good portion of what you would normally spend sent right back to you. So we're booking up pretty heavy right now.
100-degree day outside. In the attic, it's what?
With good ventilation, 130, 135.
Oh, that's tolerable.
Poor ventilation, sure. North of 150.
Yeah.
I think the hottest I've temped in North Carolina was it was a regular ranch house. They just didn't have a ridge vent, so there was no outtake ventilation. It wasn't mm-hmm. properly ventilated, and I think I temped that one out at 157. That was last year in August.
Wow. Okay. Well, what can you do for people who are having that happen? When you insulate, are you insulating inside the rafters?
We can.
You can?
Yeah, when we come out and take a look at a property, as I just mentioned, the ventilation is nearly as important as the insulation.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. So we're assessing a few different things. We're taking a look at your ventilation, ensuring that you have proper intake and outtake ventilation, so mm-hmm. the attic is getting plenty of airflow. Once you've checked that box, then it's, you know, what kind of shape is the insulation in? Do you utilize your attic for storage? Is mm-hmm. all your ductwork in the attic along with the air handling unit? These are all questions that tell you, is it better to insulate the attic floor or insulate mm-hmm. the attic rafters?
Yeah.
Each house kind of has their own, you know, each builder kind of has their own way of doing things. So it's just assessing these things and trying to come up with solutions that can help to correct the issue the homeowner is having.
Most of the unfinished bonus rooms I've seen had no insulation on the rafters.
Yep.
Add that, and what does that do? Does it keep the heat from coming in?
Well, so when you insulate the floor of the attic, for yes. example, we're not cooling off the attic. The attic is still going to be very hot. However, yep. the you know, type of insulation or the depth of insulation you have on the attic floor is going to help block as much of that heat as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, heat's going to get through. You know, standard insulation kind of works like a sponge. It absorbs heat.
Mm-hmm.
Well, like a sponge can get waterlogged. You can have a bunch of water that's just falling out of the sponge. Eventually, your insulation gets heat-soaked. So it absorbs all it's capable of for the day.
Right.
And then that heat starts transferring into your living space, warming up your house, kicking on your thermostat, turning on the air conditioner to help right. cool it back down. If you insulate the rafters of your attic, you're preventing a lot of that heat from ever getting in the attic in the first place.
Yes.
So if your air handling unit is up there, if your ductwork is up there, if that's where you store your Picassos, there's pretty good argument that could be made on why you would want to try to cool off the attic.
Yeah.
So that's why we offer all different types of insulation. We can insulate the floor, fiberglass, attic cat, rock wall, batted insulation. We can do your attic rafters, high-grade radiant barriers, open cell spray foam.
Yeah.
There's just so many different options, and they do different things. So it's just about properly educating the homeowner.
It's not something that you leave in the hands of somebody who hasn't studied it, right? You're smiling because you know a lot of people or seen their work, the folks who didn't study it.
So I'll give you an example from this last week. And I'm not going to use any names. I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus here. We had a homeowner about 6-7 weeks ago that reached out to us, and she wanted us to come in and insulate her attic rafters. Mm-hmm. She wanted to utilize her attic for storage. Her ductwork was up there. Her air handling unit was up there. So we came out, and she decided that she wanted to go with a radiant barrier. So we installed radiant barrier on all the rafters. We ran it all the way down to the soffit vents. You're getting an air channel behind the material, mm-hmm. all the way up to the ridge vent, and then it siphons out the roof. Well, about a week ago, she reached out, and she said, well, I've got a neighbor who's a roofer. And he's telling me, you guys installed this wrong. It's not going to work, and this has to be done like this, and this has to be done like that, and blah, blah, blah. So I told her, okay, I'll come out there and talk with you. If you'd like, you're more than welcome to bring your neighbor over.
Oh.
And she did. And he was a nice guy. He thought he was giving the homeowner good advice. But he said, you know, when you do it like this, you're going to void the warranty on the roofing material. He's coming from a roofer's perspective.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, so this is the reason you don't think it should be done? Yeah. It's going to void all the warranty. Okay. So I called CertainTeed. And I talked to the rep at CertainTeed, and then I called GAF and spoke with the ref at GAF, called Owens Corning, and spoke with the ref at Owens Corning, all on speakerphone with him standing there. And they all three unanimously said, no, it does not void the warranty. It does need to be installed this way. This is exactly how it should be done.
Yeah.
So he kind of ate crow, and that was the end of the conversation. The point is, there's a lot of misinformation out there.
Yeah.
You do not want me to give you advice on how to run electrical. I'm not the guy.
Okay.
Don't listen to me about that.
Right.
But I do know a little bit about insulation. And this guy knew a lot about roofing, but he didn't know anything about insulation or proper ventilation. So just be cautious about where you get your information and ensure that it is correct.
Right. And the folks who have insulated a space, let's say a shed, they put up batted insulation, they've run it all the way around the thing. Mm-hmm. And then they say, you know, it's really not a whole lot cooler in here.
Yeah.
It's really not. It's like the jacket scenario.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your jacket warms up because you're warm.
Right.
Right? It doesn't, putting the jacket on doesn't warm you. It doesn't become warm in that way on its own. Why won't the shed be cooler? If
it's insulated,
spend money on insulation. Yeah, right. Crazy.
Same reason your house is not cooler if you don't have an air conditioner. It's got plenty of insulation.
Yeah.
It's a new house. You got insulation in the attic, you got insulation in the walls. If your air conditioner goes out, is your house cool?
No.
No. It's not. It's unbearably warm.
Yes, it is.
To the point where you're blowing up the HVAC company. Please come out here and fix this so we can go to bed tonight.
Yep.
We don't have to go to a hotel. So insulation and HVAC go hand in hand. It's peanut butter and jelly, right? I can put the best insulation in there, a spray foam, for example. It's never going to be cooler than it is outside unless there is a source putting in cooler air.
Yeah.
So even if we went in there and spray foamed everything on a 95-degree day, there's a good chance it's going to be 90 to 95 degrees in that shed.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be 130. So it cut all that excessive heat out.
Okay.
But now you put in a little air conditioner, and you can get as cold as you want in there.
Yes.
The air conditioner, the insulation, doors and window seals, everything works as a system.
So there's no point in insulating if you're not conditioning the air. You're not doing something, either heating or cooling.
It depends. So some customers, they want to utilize their shed for storage. They want to put higher value things out in that storage.
Yeah.
You can insulate that with a closed cell spray foam to help mm-hmm. protect it from moisture-related damage. Mm-hmm. So there's some instances that you would go in there and insulate without HVAC
right.
if you're trying to do something very particular.
If I'm going to sit in there and do some work,
yeah,
which I've often thought of, but I can't think of any work I would do out there. But if I insulated the entire thing, a little window air conditioner would take care of it.
Big time. Yeah, right? Night and day difference.
Because, yeah.
you know, as long as it's properly insulated,
yeah.
it's going to be able to bring it down to about outside temperature. And we've all been in a garage or a shed before when it's bright and sunny outside
yes.
and it's really hot.
Yes.
In that garage or that shed, it's not going to get that hot. It's going to be about the temperature of outside. But as soon as you put in that little air conditioner and turn it on, now you're getting that shed into the high 60s, low 70s. You can go in there and take a nap.
That's ideally what I would use the shed for.
A nap. We'll just hook up a little hammock in there and a mini fridge and let you go.
See, the thing is, I got a fairly decent piece of real estate there. So it takes a long walk for my wife to find me.
Mm.
So out in the shed sleeping, that's a great thing.
Good logic.
All right. If you haven't already, please take your classic Lynyrd Skynyrd albums out of the attic.
Right.
And continue listening, please.
Don't put your vinyl in the attic.
Don't put the vinyl. All right. You've got a opportunity to get a $25 gift certificate
Ooh.
From Cape Fear Seafood Company. Go ahead, when you get it, ask about the chowder. It's so good. 919-860-9783 is our number. 919-860-9783 on Making Your Home Great. FM 92.9, AM 680, WPTF.
Thank you for listening to Making Your Home Great. If you have a question for any of our experts on the show today, call us at 919-860-9783. Now, back to Dave.
We have got to get an air conditioning company on. We have to get an HVAC company on this radio show.
Yeah.
Because it's needed. It's totally needed.
It is going to be a warm, warm summer. It is unusually hot for June. I mean, we were just talking about that. June's normally mid-80s, high 80s, the occasional 90. July, you're getting into the low 90s, mid-90s. And then August, it can kind of go either direction. But hitting 98 at the end of June is a little unusual.
Yeah, and we're going to be at Monday, high, I think, near 90. I don't know, mid-90s. But then Tuesday and Wednesday, broiling hot with actual temperatures of 101.
Three-figure temps.
We'll be fine. Just stay inside and let that air conditioner roll.
Utilize that new insulation and air conditioner.
How are you going to deal with this on a company-wide basis? I mean, is anybody going in an attic?
Yeah.
Tuesday and Wednesday?
Yeah, we will show up at 7 a.m. And,
okay.
and normally our guys are getting pulled out of the attic at about noon.
Okay.
So these jobs are taking longer. That, you know, that's the knock on waiting until now to get your insulation done. Is a 2-day job, and January is a 3-day job today. So our schedules are booking out. I think last time I looked at our schedule, we're somewhere around a month to a month and a half out right now because these jobs are taking longer than they normally would.
Right.
And I understand it. Most people don't, until the problem arises, most people aren't thinking about it. They might have remembered, well, last year was a little bit uncomfortable, but, you know, a month from now when they're like, good night. Did you see our electric bill? How much, you know, we use? All right, we need to go ahead and bring in the insulation company. Well, we're 2 months out now.
Yeah.
So we're going to get you in as quickly as I can, but you're probably going to have two more of those bills before we're able to even get out there and get this done.
Oh, and if you think on it for another month and then decide. It's almost, you're going to be into September. And, you know, September, August, it starts to cool down anyway.
Well, and the Duke rebate program is not helping. It's helping our schedule.
Yeah.
But with so many rebates that they're offering right now to increase insulation, to do doors and windows, solar packages, new HVAC systems.
Yeah.
People are really taking advantage of the fact that they can get their house insulated for like half of what they would have spent had they not been offering these rebates, which right. is just exacerbating the situation. We're just getting more and more and more customers reaching out.
Oh, you poor guy. Really?
It's good for business. It's yeah. not good when I have to tell homeowners, we are happy to help. We're here for yeah. you, but we can't come out there and do this till the end of next month.
Okay. Talk to me about the Duke rebates. How generous is it?
Very, in my opinion, very, very generous. We've already got confirmation from several of our customers. They've already received their rebates from Duke in the mail. So what Duke is doing is essentially converting your rebates into a Visa check card. So they're offering up to $700 in rebates to blow in new insulation. That also goes with spray foam and some of the radiant barrier products. They're offering $250 rebates for us to come in and seal up all your HVAC ducts with mastic to ensure that you're getting proper airflow and you're not leaking any air.
Yes.
Well, we charge $250 to do that.
So I'm breaking even.
You're getting it for free.
Yeah.
And if you have two units, one in the attic, one in the crawl space, they give you $250 each. So we'll go in and seal all of your ducts for both yeah. systems, and it's yeah. not going to cost you a nickel after you get your rebates back. So you add that on top of a 700, and these all stack on top of each other.
Sure.
So if we insulate your house, and we seal the vents in the attic, and we seal the vents in the crawl space, and we air seal your attic floor, I mean, you're looking at $1,400 in rebates on a $2,200 contract.
Yeah.
So people are really taking advantage of this stuff for good reason. Now's the eventually this program is going to go away. I don't think it can sustain long-term giving this much money back to homeowners.
So. Yeah, but, you know, their choice with Duke is either build a whole plant.
Very true.
Or offer people money to be more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
We got Matthew from Fuquay waiting on the line. Hi, Matthew. How you doing?
Doing well, Dave. Hope everybody else is.
We're good. You're on with Brock Emmons of Triangle Radiant Barrier.
Fantastic. Brock, we hear about the roof on a regular basis, but one of the things that I'm having a problem with my house is the builder, when he built it, he put that pink stuff in between the rafters, but he didn't really encapsulate it. Does that cause moisture and problems with heating and cooling the home as well?
Depending on how it's installed, it can. So the next time you're up in the attic, you're talking, if you're standing in the attic, they put batted insulation on the bottom of your roof deck, right?
In the crawl space area.
So we're talking under the house or in the attic? Crawl space is normally referred to as what's underneath the home. Matthew, did we lose you?
I'm still here somewhere.
Okay.
There you are. I found
Matthew,
you.
Matthew, the question is, are we still talking about the attic?
We're talking about the crawl space under the house.
Under the house. Okay. All right. I just wanted to establish that. So your concern is they put batted insulation in your subfloor, and you're wondering if that can cause moisture issues?
Right, because it's basically dirt, and then they built it up in the crawl space, and then they just put in the pink stuff as the quote-unquote floor insulation.
Gotcha. Okay. So when you're insulating the subfloor in a crawl space, it is normally you want to go with a paperless batted insulation. Hmm. Batted insulation, unfortunately, there's two kinds. One of them has paper, and it actually says R15 or R30 or whatever the insulation value is on the paper. You normally don't want to go with paper insulation in a crawl space because paper can absorb moisture. And in most cases, when we find organic growth, it's on the paper. Now, you're not normally going to find organic growth in insulation. Insulation is not organic, so mold cannot feed on insulation, but it can feed on the paper backing. So next time you're down there, I might reach up, pull the insulation back, and try to see if there is a paper on the back of that insulation. If there is, I might entertain having that replaced with paperless. Now, do you have plastic on the ground, or is it just exposed dirt?
It's just exposed dirt. That's how they built it back in, back before the earth cooled.
Right. Okay, before the earth cooled. A little older home.
It's a Depression-era home.
Home.
Yeah, exactly.
The dirt is what's going to be producing the vast majority of the moisture down there. Obviously, you got grandfathered in because your house was built prior to the current codes, but it is actually a code now that any house built in North Carolina has to have at least a 6 mil plastic on the ground to try to trap as much of that moisture underneath it as possible. So if you are running into moisture issues in your crawl space, I would probably think about trying to get a good high-grade plastic installed. That should help to eliminate a great deal of that. I can't say it's going to get all of it because it's still ventilated. So with vents, you could still have humid air that works its way into the crawl space. But the dirt is going to be the primary culprit in there. So that might be something I would entertain.
Okay.
Matthew,
well, thank you so much.
You are welcome.
You're welcome. Listen, hang on. We're going to get your details. You've won a $25 gift certificate to Cape Fear Seafood Company.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Brock, we're going to talk more about this whole plastic idea because, you know, I had a house. They did have plastic, but it was really, it looked like it had gotten holes punched in it.
Yeah.
And we'll talk, and it was just, you know, it was just
sporadically
it didn't go up the
thrown,
doors.
Yeah.
No, it was the whole thing, but we'll talk about it in a bit.
This is Making Your Home Great on WPTF FM 92.9, AM 680, and WPTF.com. Remember, if you missed any of the portions of today's show, we archive all of our shows as podcasts available wherever you get your podcasts and on demand always at WPTF.com. Now back to our host, Dave Alexander.
All right, Brock Emmons, we're talking about plastic.
We are.
Brock Emmons of Triangle Radiant Barrier is here to talk about what should be underneath Matthew's crawl space.
Right.
But it's not, apparently.
Well, some of the, you know, as Matthew pointed out, the older homes, you know, back then it wasn't a code requirement.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you've got a bunch of fiberglass stuffed up in your subfloor, unfortunately, fiberglass absorbs moisture. So if it's very humid and moist down there,
okay. It's
a matter of time before the insulation starts turning stringy, starts hanging down, falling away from the subfloor.
Yeah.
Means it's absorbed quite a bit of moisture and it's causing it to become dilapidated and kind of fall apart.
Yeah.
The plastic is to help, you know, prevent that problem. Try to keep the moisture content as low as possible. Keep the insulation in good shape as long as you can.
Yeah. The word mill, I think, is misunderstood.
Mm.
Does it mean thickness?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, right. 10 mil, you know, minimum code is 6 mil.
Yeah.
So if you were to put a plastic in your crawl space and you wanted to go with the absolute bare minimum you can get away with to pass code, that's going to be a 6 mil. And that material is very easily punctured.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in crawl spaces, and you know, the second you go crawling across there, if there's any rocks or any pebbles or anything underneath it, it just absolutely shreds that plastic very quickly.
Yeah, that happened in my old house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's a very common thing. If you're going to spend the money to put a plastic underneath your house,
yeah,
I would recommend going with at least a minimum of a 10 mil.
Okay.
And if you ask my opinion, I would seriously entertain at least a 10 mil reinforce, something that has a scrim built into the material, which helps it become a lot more durable. It might only be 10 millimeters thick compared to 6, but because of the scrim,
mm-hmm,
you need a knife to get through it. It is very, very, very durable.
Yeah.
So you're not going to be doing this every few years. You should do it once, and if it's installed properly. Our plastic, for example, that has scrim, has a lifetime transferable warranty.
Oh, yeah.
So as long as you're living in the house, if anything happens to the material that wasn't caused by mechanical damage, you or some contractor goes down there and tears it all up. That's mechanical damage.
Yeah.
It's all covered, so you're only going to have to pay to have this done once.
But if a contractor walks or crawls in there, mm-hmm. it shouldn't be damaged at all.
No, that's all. So it has a lifetime transferable warranty of puncture hazards.
Yeah.
So any pebbles, any rocks underneath the plastic, you go crawling around through there, it's not going to puncture the material.
Does it take care of things when they just run it from wall to wall and it stops at the wall?
You're fixing about 85% of the problem.
Okay.
When you just run it up to the wall, now you've got a crack going around the entire outer perimeter of the house where that moisture can work its way up between the wall and the plastic. Right. Now it's in the crawl space.
Yeah.
Now you did a good job with the rest of the crawl space. You got everything covered, but there's still going to be little gaps where moisture and humidity can work its way up. And mm-hmm. if left untreated for a couple of years, maybe you start developing growth in those areas.
Yeah.
So when we do plastic, we you know, you have support columns underneath your house. We call them piers.
Yeah.
That's what holds your house up. We wrap all your piers, because if we just run the plastic to the base of the pier, now around every pier in your crawl space, you've got a crack where moisture and humidity can seep up. So we wrap them. We go from the top all the way to the bottom. Mm-hmm. You can't even really see your piers. They're all covered in plastic. And when we run the material to your exterior-facing walls, mm-hmm. we don't just run it up to the edge of the wall. We then run it up the wall about 4 to 5 inches.
Yeah.
We ram set it into the wall, and we foam bead the top edge. So okay. now no moisture, no airflow is coming up from underneath the plastic, and we've got 100% coverage.
So if somebody did a house with, say, a duct tape or painter's tape... going up the wall.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's not really going to stay. We know that's not going to stay.
Right.
But you're rammed. When you say ramjet.
Ram set.
You're talking about attaching to the cement.
Yeah,
it's
essentially a 22 caliber ram set.
Yeah.
So it's a nail gun with a washer.
Okay.
So we run it up the wall, we ram set it into the wall so it's not going to fall down, and then we foam bead the top edge, so the top of the plastic line to the masonry. So there's no cracks, there's no crevices, there's nowhere for that airflow or moisture to work its way through.
My mom used to pack my lunch a lot like that. She would fold it, clip it, and then just, I mean, my sandwiches were always like brand new.
You needed an engineering degree to get it out of there?
It was really good. So that's our crawl space,
mm-hmm.
but that's like number one job,
right?
That's your lowest, I would say the lowest complexity, clearly the easier price.
Mm-hmm.
What happens beyond that? If that doesn't do the job?
Well, and so we put sensors, and I've talked on the show for years that every crawl space we do, we put a digital monitoring system down there that we sync up to the homeowner's smartphone.
Yeah.
It comes with an app. It's a free app. Doesn't cost you anything. It, mm-hmm. you know, it's included in the contract. But now you can monitor temperature and relative humidity from your couch on your cell phone 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So
yes.
you're aware of issues as they're happening.
Yeah.
So to put things into perspective, if we have a homeowner that had just their crawl space is covered in mold, it's pretty evident they have got a high relative humidity problem.
Yes.
They're working on a budget, so they can only afford to have us come in and kill the mold and put down new plastic.
Yes.
All right. So if that sensor was showing they had humidity and moisture in their crawl space at 90%,
mm-hmm.
and we come in and put in a high-grade plastic, but we didn't seal the vents,
mm-hmm.
that'll drop that humidity down to the mid-70s, which is still high enough to produce condensation.
Okay.
Once you break 72-73% relative humidity, you can start getting condensation. So
right.
now there's water. So did we really fix the problem? We helped it. We improved it.
Yeah.
But we didn't solve it. The only way you can solve a relative humidity issue is to seal the vents and then introduce airflow. That
mm-hmm.
can be either a dehumidifier or air induction.
Mm-hmm.
The plastic on the ground, the insulation on the walls, ceiling of the vents, a dehumidifier or air induction, it's all a system, very much like your doors and windows, your insulation, and your air conditioning are a system. All three of those have to be installed for it to work.
Right.
If you got insulation and a great air conditioner but no doors and windows, you're SOL. It's still going to be very hot or cold in that house. You need all three for it to do its job.
Yes.
With a crawl space, you need plastic, you need airflow, you need to seal the vents.
And the vents themselves, if we didn't have, if we didn't condition the air, do we close them in the winter and open them in the summer?
Yes. Now, the theory behind that is you're trying to keep cold air from getting in your crawl space in the winter, so your floors are not as cold. You don't have frozen pipes. We really don't have a relative humidity issue when it's cold.
Mm-hmm.
So having your crawl space open is irrelevant. We're not needing to introduce airflow to keep the humidity down.
Yeah.
So in the winter, you want them closed.
Yep.
In the summer, we've got a relative humidity issue, so you want them open to try to get as much airflow down there as you can. Even though it's not enough, it's better than leaving them sealed.
And when we talk about those two options for you, you can either use air induction or
dehumidifier.
Dehumidifier, okay. With air induction, am I correct that you are taking some air conditioning from the HVAC system and conditioning that air?
Yes.
Yeah.
So in most cases, for those of us that have an air handling unit under the house or ductwork under the house, they have junction plenums or junction boxes down there. You essentially drill a hole in a junction box and you mount an inducer. Now, we use inducers. Unfortunately, some of our competitors use dryer vents. You know, they'll just drill a hole in your junction box and hang the same kind of dryer vent you'd have on the outside of the house. We like inducers because they have a butterfly valve. So when the system's off, the valve closes. You're not getting any intake into your system.
Yeah.
You're not going to get that with a dryer vent.
Yeah.
So any critters or you know anything that get down there, they can work their way into your air conditioner. Air induction is okay. Again, because we put sensors in every crawl space, we get a lot of feedback from homeowners. We have found that, obviously, air induction is only working when you're running your air conditioner.
Yes.
So when you're running your air conditioner, you're looking at your sensor, and you're like, wow, okay, the humidity's low. Great.
Yeah.
Well, your house is cool, so the system shuts off. And then you see it spike. The humidity immediately starts going up very, very quickly. It's almost like a heartbeat on a monitor.
Yeah.
Right, you get these really high, you know, peaks and low valleys with air induction.
Yeah,
dehumidifier, it's almost like a little straight line. You just you set it on whatever you want it set on down there, which we normally recommend 55%.
Okay,
they say the sweet spot for humidity is 45 to 65, so we set the dehus right in the middle at 55.
Right,
and you watch your sensor, and it's no longer like a heartbeat. I mean, it's almost like this line that just goes straight across the screen. It's like, all right, I'm averaging between 52 and 54% relative humidity instead of 65 and 90. So in my opinion, the dehumidifier is by far the more effective option to go with. So then it comes down to which kind. So we talk with homeowners about different brands and costs, and warranties are a big one.
Yeah.
That's why we have a tendency to lean on the April Airs. They have an outstanding full replacement warranty if anything goes wrong with the system. So if you're spending that kind of money, get one with the best warranty you can possibly find. I would look at either April Air or Santa Fe.
Okay. We have a big topic to talk about over the next couple of minutes. And it used to be the one that was the scariest topic of all. Mold.
Mold.
Folks, you got mold in your house. Well, not everybody, but honestly, most of us.
Very few crawl spaces do I get into and I don't find at least some traces of mold.
All right. So most of us have some mold, which comes as a big surprise, but that's okay. We got a mold guy here. I mean, you know, for want of a better term.
Yeah.
919-860-9783. We got a mold guy and a guy who just runs at high humidity, especially in warm weather. That's what I do. 919-860-9783 for questions with Brock Emmons of Triangle Radiant Barrier on WPTF.
Thank you for listening to Making Your Home Great. If you have a question for any of our experts on the show today, call us at 919-860-9783. Now, back to Dave.
All right, so we're talking about mold.
Gross.
Mold. Brock Emmons of Triangle Radiant Barrier, my co-host, talking about mold. At one time, it was you tell somebody they've got mold in their house, and they thought, well, that's it. We just need to insure it and burn it.
Burn it down.
No, not anymore.
Well, I think that was I think a lot of that had to do with the cost of remediation of mold. Is I guess there was a misconception out there that it cost a fortune, and unfortunately, I think that misconception is based on a lot of the competition that we've had over the years that just grossly overprice what it should cost to do mold remediation.
Right.
Look, I'm not going to say mold remediation is cheap, but I've heard these horror stories where customers, like this company said they'd come in and remediate all the mold in the crawl space for $12,000. And it's like, that's so over the top expensive. It should never cost that much money. So as long as you're dealing with a company that knows what they're doing and is honest.
Yeah.
I think your average home, and I'm just going to throw average numbers out here, so people can have a better understanding. Your average house has about a 1,400 to 1,500 square foot crawl space.
Sure.
Let's say it's a 3,000 square foot two story, but it's a box on a box, right?
Yeah.
Your crawl space about half that, so you're looking about 1,000 to 1,500 square feet.
Mm-hmm.
If that entire crawl space is covered in mold. Mm-hmm. And we have to do dry ice blasting, which is absolutely the most expensive form of mold remediation. You're looking at about $3 a foot. So that area might cost you about $3,000 to have us come in and blast the entire thing mold free.
Right.
$12,000 is just insane to me.
Now, what you're doing with that we've started in the opposite direction. With the crawl space, we talked about from least expensive to more expensive. But realistically, that's the upper end.
Oh, that's worst-case scenario.
Worst-case scenario. Mm-hmm. Now, we're not guaranteeing you that your estimate's going to be $3,000.
Yeah, I mean—
No.
Look, if you've got a 1,500 square foot crawl space and it's not covered in mold, but you have sporadic growth, which is the most common, that's what you find. There's some mold over there, some mold over here, there's some mold over there. You know, we'll do spot treatment. We'll go down there with an RMR86, which is a plant-based concrobium. It's not poisonous or harmful to people or pets.
Yeah.
And we'll spot treat it, use a HEPA vac, which is essentially a shop vac with a HEPA filter and a bristle brush.
Yeah.
So after we've treated the area, we go through with that vacuum and try to, you know, get up as much surface growth as possible.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen, you know, $500 to $1,200, $500 to $1,800 in most cases with those kind of remediations.
Right.
We can fog it. We can treat it with concrobium. We can do dry ice. We can do soda blasting. Mm-hmm. We've got several different options to help remediate mold. It's just about how much volume is down there and the customer's budget.
There are multiple types of mold.
Yes.
My dad had a house that was on the bottom of a kind of a sloping hill.
A lot of water.
A lot of water. Yep. Well, this was in Syracuse, New York, which you know, people talk about those areas for snow, but between snow and rain— When I got to North Carolina, I didn't know sunny days.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't. It was a very rainy environment. He had a basement, full basement, and it all got black.
Yeah.
Especially in one area. I don't know why, but it leaked. It leaked water, and it got black.
Yeah.
Now, if we have black mold, we hit a little bit of a panic button.
Black mold can be cancerous.
Mm-hmm.
There's, as you were mentioning, there's several different types of mold. White mold has a musty smell. You can smell it. You can find it very easily.
Yeah.
Black mold doesn't have a scent. Mm-hmm. So that's why we've always said you don't find black mold with your nose. You uncover it. You pull insulation back, and it's, oh, there it is. Or you pull off a piece of drywall. Oh, there it is. We found it. That's where it's coming from.
Right.
If you have black mold that needs to be treated in a very specific way, we typically recommend going with a dry ice when you find black mold.
Yeah.
Now, this is something for our listeners to pay very close attention to. to remediate mold as a company, you have to have mold insurance. You have to be insured to remediate mold.
Yes.
Which means your company has to be BPI and CRMI certified as a mold remediation company. Okay? We are.
Mm-hmm.
If you bring a company out and you have mold and they're like, oh, we're just going to go down there and spray it with some bleach and wipe it with rags.
Yeah.
They are not insured to be doing that kind of remediation. So before you allow anyone to remediate mold underneath your house, get a copy of their mold insurance. If they hand you a general liability policy or an umbrella policy, a workers' comp policy, these are not the correct policies. Those do not cover mold. It has to be a mold insurance policy.
Now, is there a state mold certificate?
You have to get BPI and CRMI certified. So you actually have to take classes to be able to not only recognize what type of molds they are, but then know how to properly remediate those molds. So let's say you bring in a company and you didn't get a copy of their mold insurance. They went down underneath the house and they used chemicals that caused an allergic reaction to your kid. Well, who do you go after? Because they don't have an insurance company that's going to back them up. They shouldn't have been doing it in the first place. So you can't sue the insurance company. And if that business is an LLC, they're going to shut down and open up another name, and you're out of luck.
Right.
So that is to protect you as a homeowner, is before you let these people come into your home to do something as serious as mold remediation.
Yeah.
You need to know that they know what they're doing. And if they plan on using some bleach and some rags, they do not know what they're doing.
Okay. If I found white mold, will bleach kill it?
Bleach will kill surface mold.
Okay.
Okay. Now, when mold is growing on wood, it eats whatever it's growing on. It consumes it. So if you leave a bit of wood down there for years and it has mold on it, 5 years later, it's about half the size it used to be. That mold is actually eating the wood.
Wow.
So it can embed itself into the wood. You just splash some bleach up there and wipe it with a rag, you just killed the surface mold.
Yeah.
All the stuff underneath it can eventually work its way back out to the surface and just continue on, which is why we normally recommend going with concrobium, stuff that actually soaks into the wood and can kill it down to, well, I guess the best way to put it is down to the root.
Okay, we were talking last week with Holly Bowers of Roofworks. She said you got to have the basic insurance, liability coverage, but you also have to have roofing liability coverage. What do we have to ask for again?
You want them, well, they need to be BPI and CRMI certified.
Okay.
And they, you need to get a copy of their insurance that actually specifies they are covered to do mold remediation.
Right.
If you do not see the term mold remediation on there, it is not mold insurance.
And Holly made the point. In her industry, people will get the insurance, cancel it a month later after they've got that piece of paper. And then, you know, they're doing work and claiming they have insurance.
It's going to be less, a lot more difficult to do that with mold because you have to go through a lot of classes to get certified and then get the insurance. So a lot of people aren't going to cancel it after that because they had to jump through a lot of hoops to get it.
Brock Emmons of Triangle Radiant Barrier, how do we get in touch with your company?
You guys can reach out to us at TriangleRadiantBarrier.com.
TriangleRadiantBarrier.com. We're back next week, 11 o'clock on a Saturday. Got a couple of remote broadcasts coming up over the next few weeks. It's going to be fun. This is Making Your Home Great on WPTF.